We tryna live right, tryna eat right. What? I got something to say, let me talk. You either feel me or you not.
This is The Future of Policing in Columbus, a podcast production of matternews.org, presented by WCBE 90.5 FM, exploring research and solutions that will create a safe community for all in Central Ohio. Your host for today's episode is Edie Driscoll.
Hello, everyone. I'm Edie Driscoll, your host. Thank you for joining me today in this first episode of the Future of Policing in Columbus podcast series. You're going to hear four incredibly passionate guests give their insights into the challenges our next police chief will be facing and some advice for that man or woman who will be taking the reins soon. First, a little background. A little over a year ago, early in 2020, when Police Chief Kimberly Jacobs resigned, Mayor Ginther commissioned a nationwide search for the next chief. This was the first time in the history of the Columbus Division of Police that a chief was not selected from the sitting deputy chiefs. The search resulted in one candidate from the outside, Perry Tarrant, and one from within, Thomas Quinlan. Quinlan, who had been serving as interim chief for the previous year, was selected over Tarrant and began serving a one-year probationary period last February. Nearing the end of his probationary year, the mayor announced that Chief Quinlan had not met expectations and was being demoted back to his rank of deputy chief. At the beginning of March, the city budget approved the expenditure for a nationwide search. We've been promised an expedited search with a chief to be selected by May. Today, my guests are Brother Blondie, a veteran activist, Melissa McFadden, an author who has written about racism within Columbus Police, Dr. J. Love Benton, a member of the chief's advisory panel, and Reverend Tim Ahrens, a religious and social justice leader. Each of them bring very different but relevant expertise to this conversation. They all have a deep love of this city and an enduring hope that the next police chief will be able to lead us to solutions of some of our most pressing problems. Hey. Brother Blondie is a lifelong Columbus resident. He's been an activist for 35 years, participating in national actions, beginning in 2012 with the killing of Trayvon Martin. He currently serves as a spokesperson for the Heartbeat Movement, which began in 2017 with the death of Kareem Ali Nadir Jones, the first man whose killing by a Columbus police officer was caught on his body-worn camera. Welcome, Brother Blondie. We are so happy to have you here today. You have been a force in this world of activism and social justice for 35 years. You've seen a lot. You've experienced a lot of success, a lot of failure. Tell me a little bit about how that path has been for you and where you've seen the most success.
Probably back in November. It was either November, December 2012 when I went to city council to 1 week after the Sandy Hook shooting. And when I went to city council, I came with a proposal for late night basketball, you know, for the kids to go to during the summer.
Sure.
And the first year I proposed five rec centers. They gave us five rec centers. And then a year later, I went to city council again and proposed an expansion of late night basketball from five rec centers to 10 rec centers. And from 2013 all the way till 2019, the violence curved down a lot because teenagers had a place to go and somewhere to do.
Did you have any benchmarks from other cities that you were bringing to city council to talk them into this, or was it just your gut that this was going to work?
Well, this was just my gut, and I knew that late night basketball would be a better solution than the alternative that a lot of parents had there. They was thinking more of a eye for eye and have teachers carry guns in school, and I felt that wasn't a good solution either.
Absolutely.
I felt late night basketball is the ultimate win-win.
So as you've moved forward from that through this last year of a lot of protests and a lot of police shootings, you're centered in Columbus, right? You've lived here your whole life.
Correct.
And you've watched city council come and go. You've watched police chiefs come and go. We're in a situation right now where mayor is going to be choosing our next police chief. And you have an eye and a sense of what the challenges will be for that chief. Can you give me a, you know, top 10 list or a short list of things you'd like to see the chief work on? But more than that, what are his barriers going to be to actually getting stuff done?
Whoever's the new chief, he or she, their work is going to be cut out for them. I think a chief needs to be a chief who grew up in the community, lives in the community, not out in Worthington, Upper Arlington, and Pataska, and that type stuff, because how can you understand a community you've never been and worked in or lived in? Also, the police chief needs to hold people accountable, which I don't see a lot of that. You know, having a civilian review board, it sounds like a good thing, but I think the mayor's doing that based on emotions as opposed to fact. A lot of decisions was made based on the video of George Floyd. And we've, as African Americans, has had problems with the police way before George Floyd. To give you a perfect example, Edie, this coming March 3rd, 2021, will mark the 30th anniversary of the Rodney King beating that everybody saw on video.
We sure did.
And that turned out to be injustice because none of the police officers was charged, which led to the infamous LA riots back on April 29th, 1992.
Right.
And trust and believe, hip hop and the Rodney King played a huge role in George Bush being just a one-term president.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the history of the police amongst Black folks and systemic racism. Systemic racism has been going on for a long period of time, and always bring up issues of systemic racism that a lot of people, both Black and white, are afraid to mention, such as I remember a time as a kid growing up in the 70s. I remember a time, Edie, where a Black police officer couldn't even question, let alone arrest a white criminal or suspect without a fellow white officer present.
That's astounding.
And then,
how long ago was that?
Gotta be a little bit more than 50 years ago, if that. I saw it in the 1970s.
Wow.
As a kid. And then when the Black police officer did put the handcuffs on you in front of a white officer, he wasn't allowed to read that white person their rights. The white officer did that. So, you know, systemic racism has been going on for a long period of time, and it's been going on in every aspect of Black people's lives, whether we're at work, whether we're at home, whether we're just out and about having fun.
So what will the next chief, obviously that's a hurdle for them, given that this is the way we've policed in Columbus forever. What do you think the chief will need to do? What sort of leadership will they need to show in order to overcome that?
Well, the chief needs to start off by ending the all white boy network that you see in all companies, in all businesses. You know, whether it's the police force, whether it's the fire department, it just seems racism everywhere. He has to be more strict on having more sensitivity training. Mm-hmm. Let the officers show more understanding, compassion when they do meet someone who happens to be autistic or deaf or have some other type of mental issue.
That seems to be a big percentage of the folks who experience excessive force, use of excessive force by the police. How much of that do you think the chief actually has control over? What sort of policies would he be able to either put into force or actually enforce that already exist that might change some of that?
Well, I just think whoever's going to be the next chief has to understand, okay, the people he's speaking to, the civilians, you know, just like their parents, he's a parent too. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. If he speaks to them on a level of father to father or mother to mother, that could get something started. Another problem we have, I think the police needs to take certain things a little bit more serious. We definitely have no equal justice. You shoot and kill Andre Hill or Casey Goodson, but you put handcuffs on Lincoln Rutledge, who on April 10th, 2016, shot and killed Columbus police officer Stephen Smith in a standoff. And yet they found a way to shoot this man in the leg and apprehended him. I also think they need to at least make an apology or reinstate a black female police officer, Barbara Horton Alomar, who in 2003, Columbus police fired her for spanking her nephew. Now, you can kill unarmed black men, women, and children all day and still have a job, but spank your nephew, that's a whole different ballgame.
It seems to me that there's a pretty long list of black officers who have worked for CPD over the years who have left under similar circumstances. And that if you look at the numbers, we've actually reduced from the hiring that happened after the big lawsuit in the 80s, we've reduced significantly the recruiting and the retention more so. I mean, I think they talk a lot about recruiting, but then they don't talk about retention. You can recruit lots of officers, but if you, as you've just given the example, if you fire them for spanking someone, they're not there anymore. That speaks to the disparity in how discipline is handed down, all kinds of issues like that. You know, you reflect back on historical, what a lot of people would think is, oh, well, that's a long time ago. But these sorts of things are happening now. And the lawsuits against the city by police officers are showing a lot of those very important details for all of us to understand. So let me just ask you a final thought. If you had one piece of advice to give the incoming chief, what would that be?
The best advice I can give to the chief is listen to the community. That's it.
Very simple and very, very helpful. It has been wonderful to talk to you today, and I'm sure we'll talk again. Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome.
Melissa McFadden is here today as a private citizen, but she is currently the highest ranking Black female officer in the Columbus Division of Police. She's filed several equal employment opportunity claims against the division and has documented her struggle in walking the thin black line, combating racism in the Columbus Division of Police. She holds bachelor degrees in criminology and social work, a master's in criminal justice, and recently achieved her law degree from Capital University Law School. Welcome. I am so honored to have you join us today. How are you doing?
I am good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
You've been with the division for 24 years. You've seen a few chiefs in that time. How many have you served under?
Well, as I came on in 1996, and James G. Jackson was the chief. He served until 2009, and then believe Walter Disselswag took over for a couple of years, and then they named Chief Kim Jacobs, and then Chief Quinlan. So I guess it would be four chiefs throughout my 24 years.
So you've probably seen some differences in their leadership style. Can you tell us what that was like working for different chiefs?
Well, each chief, I guess they have their own leadership style, but in actuality, they're really not that different because the system remained the same throughout my career from my perspective. It's the system that's in need of change. And none of the chiefs have been able to change the system to benefit the community as well as us officers inside that are being targeted. So to me, they're all the same.
And you've been pretty outspoken calling for an outsider to come in and be chief. What leadership characteristics are you looking for in that person?
The leadership characteristics I'm looking for a person to come in from the outside is someone with fresh ideas that don't have that mindset that everything police do is correct, that's willing to stand up to the FOP, which is our union, that's willing to be fair and implement policies that's going to impact the lives of the officers inside, the females and the blacks that are constantly being discriminated against, mistreated, as well as a leader they'll come in and make sure our black community are not getting force used on them excessively compared to other ethnic groups in the city of Columbus. So I'm looking for someone, a transformational leader, to come in and make actual change happen where you can actually see it.
Tell us why that's important. What does the city need right now in terms of transformation?
I mean, we need a lot. The system of policing is corrupt. And I say that to say the people and the certain people in power, they are dishonest. When citizens file complaints, they fall on deaf ears. We're always playing favoritism and always taking the side of the officer. It's time for somebody to say enough. And we need somebody that's a transformational leader that's going to change that whole dynamic of that favoritism that is a us versus them mentality when it comes to police versus the community. We need all that to be shifted. We really need someone that's going to be community oriented from the top down. We fake community oriented policing right now. We're not truly in all aspects of the division community oriented policing. So we need someone that's actually going to practice it, it's going to implement policies towards that.
So let's assume we find somebody who has that mindset and has those skills and that leadership perspective. What challenges are they going to face as they come in to try to do all of that?
They're going to face challenges with the union, challenges with the status quo, the good old boy system that's not wanting it to change. In the past, we've always had people that make chief that was raised in the division. So they always had that good old boy system status quo mindset. So it's just a change of figureheads, but the system remains the same. When they start trying to tear down the system, they're going to face a lot of resistance from the people that benefit from the system. So they have to be aware of that.
That sounds like a daunting challenge. And I think a lot of community leaders are pointing to the same thing. Thank you so much for your time today. I think your insight is really a perspective that we don't often get to hear. I wish you well as the Chief Search Committee continues.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Take care.
You too.
Dr. J. Love Benton is an adjunct professor at Columbus State Community College. Her doctorate is in leadership and change from Antioch University, but her background is unique in that it intersects with several disciplines that include education, diversity, equity and inclusion, curriculum development, teaching and learning, the nonprofit sector, sexual assault, domestic violence, trauma-informed care, and the LGBT communities. You have been serving on the Chief's Advisory Panel for about 6 months. And you've seen pretty close the kind of day-to-day activities the chief is involved in, the kinds of decisions that he has to make, the kinds of pressures he faces. So as you think forward to the next chief that the city selects, what would you look for in terms of leadership skills or management skills? I mean, what stood out to you as being important?
So as a leadership scholar, I would first say that the new chief needs to embody and embrace servant leadership. servant leadership really focuses on 10 basic principles where they are listening and empathy, healing. So knowing how to bring about transformation and integration into your organization, awareness, being able to persuade the people that work for you, work with you, into the values and mission of the institution in which you serve and the people in which you serve. You needs to have foresight, commitment to the growth of the people, I think is very important. Growth isn't just about technical in nature. It's really about considering the personal growth of the officers. And then also, we'll know immediately if this is a good chief for us, and that is building community, right? Being able to build community inside and outside of the police force is going to be essential. And servant leadership for me is just one part of it, because, you know, servant leadership is about serving people and putting people first. But with what the challenges we have, you're going to have to couple that with transformational leadership. And transformational leadership is really when a leader comes into an organization and they work with the people in the organization to identify the needed change. And then they also work with them to create a vision, to guide that change through inspiration.
So that's, I was going to ask you about that when you mentioned that a minute ago. Tell me more about how vision, mission feed into this when it relates to a police chief, because you have vision coming from the community, you have vision coming from the community leaders, you have vision coming from the elected leaders, and then you also have sort of an entrenched cultural vision coming from the people who've always worked there, right? So how does a person who's in a police chief position mesh all of those different visions if they're different?
And so that's the key of a transformational leader, right? Is to be able to create and co-create one vision. The organization, the police organization, should have a mission, purpose, and vision statement. And so a transformational leader would look over that mission, vision, and purpose statement and work with the people within that serve the community, the police force, and really try to either embrace and embody what the current mission, purpose, and vision statement is, actually live it out through principles, actually for every move that they make, say, how does this fit into our mission? How does this serve our vision? How does this fit into our purpose for every decision that they make, and make sure that everything is aligned? And if the vision, if the current vision, mission, and purpose isn't what we need as a community, right? As a mm-hmm. Columbus community, then they need to work within their teams to create a new one. And it's about co-creation, right? Like a transformational leader isn't going to come in and say, I'm going to make it this way and it has to be this way. They're going to come in to, once again, couple with servant leadership to listen, to have compassion, to hear everyone's point of view, and ultimately persuade and have people corral around what the consensus is on how to move forward within that organization.
So is that, in your mind, is that going to be the biggest challenge, is doing that co-creation? Is that where the, you know, roadblocks are going to be, or are there other challenges as well that you've seen that they'll have?
Yeah, so that's going to be one challenge. But the other challenge is building a relationship and a bridge with the FOP.
Oh, absolutely.
Without the FOP buy-in, the FOP has to become a part of the community. Right now they stand alone and they have a lot of power in standing alone. The new chief is going to have to figure out how to corral the FOP to bring them and make them a part of not only the police force, but also the community, also the city. That's going to take someone that has strong values, strong morals, but also, once again, someone who has a commitment to transform our police force.
So is the FOP then a part of that co-creation process where they would actually be part of the folks giving input into that vision and mission?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. If you are actually embodying tenets of transformational leadership and you're embodying the tenets of servant leadership, you must embody all and include all stakeholders. right? All stakeholders. I understand the FOP, like I said, is their own entity, right? And mm-hmm. and they have their own rules and they have a lot of power, but someone has to be able to incorporate and include the FOP in the vision, mission, and purpose of what we want to see in Columbus.
Right now, they seem to be more of an adversary.
Absolutely.
And that is where a lot of the stalling out happens in this process, is that,
you know, absolutely. I compare it to, if I think about education and put my education hat on, I really compare it to like principals, right? And teachers. Principal may have taught, they may have only taught for 1 year, or sometimes they have taught for 10 years and then they put on that administrator hat. And when they put on that administrator hat, they lose the value of lived experiences in the classroom. They lose the skills needed that they had as a teacher to connect with students. They distance themselves. They have their own, kind of like their own world outside of teachers, right? Mm-hmm. But an effective transformative leader, an effective servant leader is one that can become an administrator, yet still include teachers' voices, students' voices, the lived experiences of them, still can get feedback, give feedback, co-create, and almost kind of like have an open door policy where they are a part of the institution as a whole and not separated from the institution as a whole, right? And I think that that has to happen as we continue to negotiate with the FOP, as we continue to work with the FOP, as we continue to go down this line, you know, the new chief is going to have to do that.
Well, it sounds to me like in your model, as you've defined it, there are a lot of different stakeholders, and most of the stakeholders that I have talked to in this hour have been very eager to have those conversations and very eager to be part of that co-creation. And that is, so maybe it is just the FOP in terms of bringing them into that conversation that is the main challenge. If you have one thing that you could say to the next chief, the one thing that is the most important thing for he or she to hear as they walk into that office, what would that be?
To denounce racism and to bring humanity back into the police force.
Thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed learning from you and hope to be able to talk to you again sometime.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The Reverend Dr. Tim Ahrens has been a pastor in Columbus for 32 years, serving the last 19 as the senior minister at the First Congregational Church downtown. He's a founding pastor of the Bread Organization, and he conceived of the Washington Gladden Social Justice Park at Broad in Cleveland. Cherished by our city as the first social justice park in the nation. You're a minister that has an interest in the social justice fabric, I would call it, of our city. And you find ways to weave lots of different voices into that fabric and lots of different programs. So we are in a place right now in our city where we've been focused on a police chief transition. And a lot of folks are focused on who that person will be. Today, I'd like to hear what you think that person's life is going to look like. Tell me what you think the new chief is going to face. And in that context, what sort of skills will they need to be able to face those challenges?
First of all, thanks for inviting me to participate.
You're welcome.
I think that it's an interesting question, the new chief, because, you know, as one who was close to the search process that brought us Tom Quinlan, I remember the shock that I felt when the choice was announced and Quinlan was chosen instead of Perry Terran. Mm-hmm. It didn't match with what I had heard, that the mayor really wanted to look for someone who would bring reform, who would institute the changes they knew they needed. And then he picked somebody from within. And clearly, Tom Quinlan didn't have the skills to make the changes that were needed. And we have thought that all along. So, I mean, this was, there's no surprise here for me. If anything, I feel like an old Testament prophet who was shouting from the rooftops and, you know, someone heard us and said, oh yeah, what he said, right? I think there's a lot of challenges for the new chief. Number one is you have a police department with major issues of systemic racism. The statement about the blue line, I've often said of the Columbus Police Force, there's not a blue line in the Columbus Police Force. There's a white heterosexual male line, and then there's the other officers in the department. So there's a real problem. The problem has continued to grow. It has not been dealt with. It's not been handled in training. It's not been handled in community relations. It's not been handled in creativity. It's not been handled in funding. It certainly has been avoided by the FOP. And I will tip my hat to this mayor. He's the first one to sort of try to take on the FOP. We've got some major problems for the new chief to take on. It doesn't help. And I'll say very clearly that when the chief going out was questioned, I remember a press conference being held over the summer by the former chiefs to get behind him. So that's a wonderful side of how systemic racism and the ingrown nature of the police force works, right? A nepotistic system. They couldn't be wrong because they're ours, and ours are never wrong.
Absolutely. And
you will never change if you protect yourselves that
one of the things that struck me about that particular press conference was they asked former chief Kim Jacobs if she had heard of the Matrix Report, which for our listeners was a consulting company that came in and did a complete review of police operations and gave a couple hundred recommendations. And her response was that it was a waste of money. And she was in charge while that was going on. And that was one of the mayor's initiatives. So there was already this message that the incoming chief wasn't really going to have to pay attention to all of those reforms.
Right. Well, and the other thing to say about that is, in terms of the Matrix Report, one of the things that stood out for me in that report was, speaking of systemic racism, when interviewed across the board and asked if there were problems related to discrimination and racism within the department, a high percentage, and I want to say 75% of those in the police force said no. There was absolutely no problems whatsoever. But of the African-American officers that were interviewed, 80% said yes. So what that says to me is, since the department is 90% white, mm-hmm. right? You know, it sort of blurred the picture. But if 80% of those who are people of color, brown and black officers, are saying, yeah, there's a real problem here, then my takeaway is there's a real problem here. And the problem is greater than just those who are experiencing the discrimination within the force, but those who have no clue of how racist they are, right? I mean,
yes.
Of course, we all know that anyone who says, I'm not a racist, is a racist, right? Yeah, I mean, Ibram X. Kendi says it well. You're either an anti-racist or a racist. So, you know, I want to hear, the first thing I would say is the new department head as the new chief needs to create an organization that is anti-racist, period. Someone would say, well, what does that look like? And I said, well, you know, there's a lot of ways to create that. It's been done in a number of places, and it's hard work. We could look to Cincinnati and their 20-year struggle to change their police force. But the effect of that is that violent crime is down 70% in Cincinnati, that the number of arrests of black males is down 60%. I mean, you begin to see some major shifts when a system is run right. And we have the problems we have because we have a system that is completely dysfunctional. And I mean completely. I mean, I can tell personal stories of how this is, you know, from my own experience with the police in this city.
So with the new chief coming in understanding that there is this complete breakdown on a social level, on a personal level, but understanding that that culture has been developed for 100 years, that there isn't really any sort of break in it. It's been very, very consistent, and that the people inside the division grew up in it. How does a leader take an organization like that, that is under contract with a union, that can't, folks can't be fired? How do you take an organization like that as a leader and begin? You mentioned a minute ago, it's hard work, but lay out for us a little bit, maybe from your perspective as a minister, where does that work start?
Well, you know, the work starts, first of all, every single person within the department needs to take a look at themselves as a human being. When you look at the shooting and the murder of Andre Hill and police standing around while a man is dying on the ground in front of them, doing nothing to resuscitate him, means that you've actually bled out and bred out of the officers in the department that quality of compassion that should be basic to every human being. Every single one of those men and women should have been on their hands and knees, especially the guy who shot him, trying to do whatever they could to resuscitate and save this human being in front of them. So you've got some very basic training to do, and it has nothing to do with guns and body cameras. It has to do with mentality, and it has to do with team. You know, how do you build teams? When you've got discrimination such as there is in this department, and it translates to the streets, right? And mm-hmm. we see it on the streets, that if you can't trust the person who's in the squad car beside you, or who is being called in behind you on a call, then you're not safe. And certainly the people who are in the community aren't safe. So, I mean, there's some very basic kinds of things. I'm a pastor, okay? So, you know, I don't have all the little training mechanisms that police have, but I can tell you, I would do a lot of community building. I would do a lot of group building. I would walk these officers on the streets. We have officers who are patrolling in neighborhoods they've never even driven in before they move into that precinct. They don't know the city. They don't live in the city. So they don't care about the city. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but if this isn't your city, then it's not your, and it's not your home, then you may treat not only those folks of color differently, but everyone differently.
Absolutely.
And so I think there has to be an investment by the men and women on the force and by the community to also engage. You know, one of the things that we have pastors have said is precinct by precinct, we'll show up and be present for training with community and police. We're all in. I mean, we're not saying anything that we're not willing to do ourselves in terms of the development of a better city. But when the model is protect and serve myself, and not protect and serve Columbus, that's not going to help anybody.
Those are excellent thoughts. If you have one final piece of advice to give the incoming chief, if he could only hear one thing from you, what would that be?
I would tell the incoming chief to spend a lot more time with community leaders and citizens in this community who care about this city. I would have him or her start with the mothers and the fathers of all of the men and women who have been gunned down by police officers in this city. That's where I would ask him to begin.
It's a wonderful
thought. I want him to look into the eyes of Adrian Hood and Tamela Payne. And I want him to come to know the daughter of Andre Hill. I want them to be his first relationships or her first relationships, so that they step into this knowing the pain that has been caused by officers who are serving this city.
Those are wonderful sentiments, and I really appreciate you joining me today, because I think you'll probably have an opportunity to tell the chief that yourself, but it's wonderful to hear it in advance, because we can all get behind that sort of sentiment and make sure that it happens. Thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate your taking time to talk.
Thank you for tuning in to the Future of Policing in Columbus podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Our theme music is written and performed by Unknown 811.
Why you crossing the line? I'm just raising my voice. Why you keeping me down?